He's everywhere I look, in everything I do. But I guess that's the grieving process, or at least it's what everyone says. During my lunch break today, I make a run to the hospital. I'm still dealing with insurance stuff, so I furnish the billing office with just one more piece of information they need. The woman tells me to come back in an hour, so I decide to grab a quick lunch in the cafeteria. As I walk down the corridor, I turn the corner and run smack into Dr. Mercer. Once again, his first name escapes me. I give myself a pass because the night I met him, I wasn't exactly in the right frame of mind.
Kate.
Dr. Mercer. I extend my hand to him.
I thought we passed all the formalities. Please, call me Drew.
Chapter 31. Present. It's the first day of spring, and I stand by the window of my apartment and gaze out as the sun makes its first appearance for the day. Today is move-in day, and nervous excitement wouldn't allow me to sleep. Arms circle me and draw me back into a firm chest.
Morning, beautiful.
I turn in his arms and press my lips against his. Morning.
I didn't expect you to be up so early.
I shrug. I've rarely seen dawn since I moved to D.C.
It's pretty impressive, but it has nothing on you.
My lips curl, and then I watched in stunned silence as shirtless, looking sexy as hell Andy kneels down on one knee. My heart stops. The sunrise is forgotten as no light shines on me like the man before me. It's been several months since the awkward conversation between Drew's parents and me. They seem genuinely happy that I've found someone else. Their support and love has meant the world to me. Now that everyone knows, there is nothing to stop me from charging forward into a new life except myself. Andy's eyes, so much like Drew's, sparkle up at me. My chest ceases to move.
Sweetheart, breathe.
Every sound is caught in a vacuum as I let out a breath I know I've been holding for a few years.
Kate, you lit a fire in me long before I knew what that fire meant.
They say when you die, your life flashes in front of your eyes. I have that surreal moment now. Everything begins to slow, and the memory since the day I met Andy comes back like a sledgehammer to the chest. About 7 months after Drew, I rush into the hospital, hating that I have to be there, but the insurance company needs some paperwork signed off in order to finalize benefits. It's something I should have done months ago, but I couldn't bear it. The woman in front of me has no sympathy for me. I'm sure she's seen and heard it all. My circumstances aren't dire, at least to anyone besides me. You can pick up the form in an hour. That's the best I can do. I nod and walk to the cafeteria. I haven't had lunch, and I don't want to leave and come back. While I'm deciding whether or not to go with a Cobb or Caesar salad, someone says my name.
Kate.
I turn, and it takes a moment for me to recognize the face. I'm not sure why. His eyes are the spitting image of Drew's. Dr. Mercer. I extend my hand. There is no way I could forget this man's kindness. I practically sobbed all over him the day Drew asked me to leave his hospital room for good.
I thought we passed all the formalities. Please, call me Drew.
I nod, but it's hard to say that name without breaking out in tears.
How are things?
He asks. Grief overtakes me, and a tear slips through my defenses.
It's okay, Kate. I shouldn't have asked. Let me buy you lunch.
I glance up at him. I'm not ready to date, I blurt. Dr. Mercer looks at me, shocked, and I realize my mistake. With a polite smile, he says,
I'm not sure my girlfriend would appreciate me asking anyone on a date. I just thought I could offer you an ear.
My face must turn beet red. I'm sorry. Ever since I took off my rings, I've been getting hit on occasionally. I hadn't wanted to take off my engagement and wedding rings, but every time I looked at them, I couldn't stop crying. After several months, Mom finally suggested that I take them off, not because I want to forget Drew, but so I could remember him without the tears.
I can't say I blame them, but I totally understand. It's going to be a long time until you can be better.
I'm glad he didn't say, be okay. I'm not sure I can ever be okay. I don't know if I'll ever be better. He nods sympathetically.
Have you considered a support group?
Been there, done that. And don't get me wrong, they help so many people. But I feel like a fish out of water, because most of the people there are so much older than I am. I don't want to take antidepressants, but if I don't turn a corner soon, I think I may start.
Don't be afraid of them. They aren't habit-forming or anything like that. But let me ask you, have you tried running? Studies really do show it can help with depression.
I used to run, but haven't in a couple of years.
Why don't you try? Running can help clear your mind and get the endorphins going to make you feel better in general. I run with a group, and you can join us if you'd like.
His words ring true. He is a doctor, and I've heard that about Renan before. I feel like there is a cloud that follows me everywhere. I can't even go to my house and move the boxes Drew thoughtfully packed so I wouldn't have to. The house is staged. I just need to get those boxes out if I truly plan to sell the house. That's hard, too. I don't want to sell the house we picked together. Yet I can't imagine living there without him. Out of his pocket, he produces tissues, like he did the last time tears flowed down my face.
Small steps, Kate. Rome wasn't built in a day.
Dr. Mercer takes both salads and steers me to the register. I find myself sitting as I continue to release the words I've been so scared to say, knowing everyone must be tired of all my crying. I can't ask his parents. They've been through enough. Ben, his best friend, is a wreck just like me. He suggested a moving company because I don't think he wants to go in there any more than I do. I watched my husband slip away in that house, and I just can't go there. I don't want to ask my parents because they've practically packed up the house for me.
I can get the boxes for you.
I glance up and meet those azure blue eyes, so much like my dead husband's, and the hurt bubbles up like a geyser. I can't ask you that.
Why not? Drew was one of ours. You can't imagine how he's missed around here. I didn't know him well, but I can't imagine anyone else that wouldn't offer to help you in any way.
After some more convincing, Dr. Mercer drives behind me to my old house after I pick up my paperwork. His shift is over, and with some directions from me, he enters the place I once called home. It doesn't take him long, and he comes out with Drew's stuff.
There's one marked for you.
I nod, and he puts it in my trunk.
I'll take the rest for you to Goodwill.
Thanks for everything, including lunch, I say. He smiles warmly.
Don't mention it.
8 months after Drew. When the news comes, I'm so overwhelmed. I find myself in the park, running down a path. The pads of my feet smack in the ground are the only noise in my head. Dr. Mercer was right, only it took me one more hard-headed month to take his advice and try running again. For the first time in a while, I feel alive. I can't believe how much I've missed this. My heart races from exhilaration and not depression. I'm in no way fine, but I feel marginally better. I run around a corner and glance up to see those striking blue eyes. For a second, my heart skips a beat. Then I realize the blonde hair doesn't belong to my Drew, but to Dr. Mercer.
Kate.
Dr. Mercer.
You're not going to call me Drew, are you?
I force the words out of my mouth because he's been nothing but kind to me. Drew. The name is like a bitter pill on my tongue. My Drew should be with me right now.
Tried running, eh?
He asks with an eyebrow raised. You were right. It clears my head. It's what I need from the news I just got.
News?
We continue to jog in place as other joggers pass, and for some reason it's easy to talk to him. I got a really good offer on the house. A nice family with a baby on the way wants the house. They love it. I managed to say the words without crying. They will make it the home it was meant to be. He nods, but doesn't offer any words of encouragement. He tilts his head toward the trail. I nod and take off in the direction I had been heading, and he follows. We run for a while until I get back to my starting point.
You should join our group.
I glance up at him after toweling off my face. I've stopped and start to stretch, but he's still moving. Apparently, my 30 minutes is just a warm-up for him.
The one I mentioned a while back.
When I still show no signs of recognition, he says,
there are a group of us that run daily. It doesn't require any socialization. You don't have to talk at all during the runs. Sometimes it's good to run with other people. They help keep you motivated.
I bend forward to shake out my muscles. When I straighten, he adds,
there's a morning run at 6 and an evening run at 6. Pick your time. It's not formal or anything. We usually gather near the statue.
It sounds fun. I'll think about it.
Good. And it was good seeing you, Kate.
You too. A year and a little over 2 months after Drew. Jenna stares at me like I'm lying to her. I swear we're just friends. Her face softens. You know it's okay to date other people. Drew didn't expect you to be a hermit. I glance away. I'm not ready, Jenna. I'm just not. I'm not sure when I'll ever be. She doesn't understand. When you find the love of your life, who can ever match up to that? And it won't be fair for me to see anyone while comparing them to Drew. I've seen pictures of you two. You sporting a huge smile. You ran in the 10K prostate cancer race. You have breakfast with him a few times a week and sometimes dinner. He helped at your yard sale and he moved furniture with Ben. It's incidental. We're only friends. He's dating someone. As far as the race, it was a challenge. I did it and can mark it off my bucket list. I doubt I'll run in any more races, and I haven't seen him in a few weeks. Why? I shrug. I've been running most mornings. He hasn't. I assume he's running in the evening. It's not like we call each other to coordinate our schedules. Mm-hmm. I groan. He's with someone. You're reading our friendship wrong. You have to admit he's hot. I shake my head. I've never looked at him that way. She stares at me like I grew antlers. He's gorgeous, Kate. There's no way you don't see it. I shake my head. He reminds me of what? I ask. Never mind. I would date him. Good, I'll pass that along if he becomes single. She dismissively waves my words away. You do that. Anyway, why don't you date someone, anyone, and make them take you to dinner? You're too skinny. I roll my eyes at her. Look, I have to go. Running this afternoon, hoping to run into a certain someone? She makes air quotes with her fingers. Ignoring her, I rush out the door. Only Dr. Mercer is there. I try not to notice him, but Jenna has me assessing him differently when the run is over, and we're all stretching out so our muscles won't cramp up. When he tugs off his shirt and begins to towel off, I have to admit he would be a good catch for someone, just not me.
You up for dinner?
He asks. I smile and nod. Outside of Jenna and Ben, I haven't had many close friends, and he's become one. We sit at a popular deli, waiting for our salads and sandwiches. How have you been? Is everything okay? It's the first time I've seen him not give me a smile.
The truth is, my girlfriend broke up with me. She's tired of my hours and how I get called in at odd times.
Wow, she had to know that going into the relationship. He purses his lips.
She did. Says she thought she could handle it.
I'm sorry. Did it happen today? He shakes his head.
No, a few weeks ago. I guess it's really hitting me today. I've been so busy with work, I haven't had time to think about it.
We've become so comfortable with each other, I don't think twice when I ask him my next question. Did you love her? He glances up thoughtfully.
I wouldn't say love, but she won't be the only woman who can't put up with my profession. It kind of sucks to think that my job will be a turnoff.
Somehow I think she's in the minority.
Jenna's words come back to me.
Anyway, I have a friend, I begin, and map out my plan for setting up a blind date.
2 days later, Jenna completely blows me off.
No way, that's your doctor. I saw how he looked at you at your yard sale. His eyes narrowed any time a guy came up to ask you for the price of something.
We're just friends, I say for the millionth time.
I'm still not going out with him,
she says adamantly.
But you said you would date him, and I set it all up because of that.
Jenna won't change her mind.
Therefore, I find myself walking into the bar and lounge to find him surprised to see me.
I'm sorry, I say sheepishly.
He seems resigned.
She doesn't want to date a doctor.
No, it's not that. I don't want to lie to him. She has this crazy idea about you and me.
His eyes go wide, and it stings just a little. I'm not even sure why. I like him as a friend, but I guess knowing he wouldn't be interested in me at all hits the old ego like a wrecking ball.
Why don't you stay? We can make the best of it. I don't get many nights like these that often.
Feeling guilty, I set up this date without talking to Jenna first. I agree. It isn't a hardship. I enjoy spending time with him. We never seem to have trouble coming up with conversation topics.
Dance with me,
he says later. I meet his eyes.
Are you serious?
Yeah, why not? You've been moving in your chair for the past half an hour.
He teases. Fine, why not? I accept, more just because he said it so much like a dare. I take his hand and we dance. The fast-moving songs have my heart racing like I'm running. For that time, my mind is free and clear, and I see the man before me for the first time. He's good-looking, if not gorgeous, just like Jenna said. Somehow, I think I've known that. I've only ignored it until now. His girlfriend is a fool. He's a great guy and will make someone a good husband one day. When the night is over, he walks me to my car.
I had fun.
Me too, I say.
After I click the lock on my car, he opens the door so I can get inside. For the craziest of moments, I wonder if he will kiss me. The moment passes and he doesn't, so I drive away and get back to my daily life. A year and 4 months after Drew.
You're finally going out with him tonight?
Jenna asks, genuinely surprised.
It was last minute, his date canceled. He asked if I could go with him.
Then I add, as friends, before Jenna can get any ideas.
Friends, my ass. Jenna, we are just friends, but you like him.
It's the first time I hesitate in my response.
I don't think I'm ready. Drew,
Jenna cuts me off.
This is gonna sound harsh, but Drew is gone, and he's never coming back, and we are all sorry that's the case. But you promised him you would live. I'm sorry I have to pull that card, but it's been long enough. No one is gonna fault you for moving on.
Her words still bounce in my head as I drink my glass of wine. When he turns his back, I down the rest and give the empty glass to the waiter. When he turns back to me, I feel the need to fill the space.
You know everyone,
I say, nervous for the first time.
My parents know everyone, and thus they know me.
Your family and Jenna's.
Jenna would probably get stopped every few steps. This benefit has all the old families in attendance.
It's tough sometimes, like tonight when I would rather be talking to you than some stuffed shirt who knows my dad or mom.
I find myself staring at his lips while he talks. I wave a hand at my face, suddenly feeling flushed.
Are you hot? Do you want to walk out on the terrace?
I nod frantically because I can't stop staring and stupid. He takes my hand and leads me outside. The night is cool, and we stand by the marble railing, staring out into the night. We start to talk at the same time.
No, you go ahead, I say.
He seems to take a breath.
Kate, I'll be honest with you. I'm glad you're here with me and not someone else.
Really?
I like you, Kate. I think I like you more than you're ready to hear. And I've tried to be patient and not push. But Kate...
It might be the wine, but I move in and silence him with my lips. I press them to his and savor the moment for a second. His hand snakes behind my back, and I start to feel warm all over. It has to be the wine. 3 glasses might have been the courage I needed. When I pull back, his eyes are heavy on mine.
Kate.
I shake my head. I want this. I want you, if you'll have me. I take his hand. I've known him for almost 1.5 years. This isn't rushed, my subconscious tells me. We've taken time to get to know each other, and I need to know. I need to know if I can move on. Let's see if they have a room. He stops and holds my hand so I can't move toward the doors.
Are you sure? I can wait.
He scrubs a hand through his hair.
Hell, I have been waiting.
His words puzzle me for a second. You had a girlfriend. He shakes his head.
I had a girl. She was more than a friend, but not by much. And maybe that was my fault, because I've been infatuated with you since the first time I saw you. It was the wrong time, so I backed off. Now
you're talking too much. Let's just see where this goes. When I wake up in the morning with him naked in the sheets, I completely freak out. I get dressed while he sleeps, and I rush out without saying goodbye. 1 year and 7 months after Drew. It takes Jenna talking me down from the ledge before I'm able to talk or see the good doctor again. I'm scared of the feelings he's creating in me. He's been a great friend, and being with him beneath the sheets made me want more. Still, I feel like I'm cheating on my dead husband. He finally coaxes me out to have lunch with him. He's been understanding, letting things take a step back in a slower gear. I'm grateful for that. I still feel somewhat guilty for feeling anything for anyone other than my late husband, Drew McKnight. Yet Drew Mercer makes it impossible not to have a good time. He's telling me horror stories about working at the hospital.
I walked into the patient's room without knocking. Mind you, he's a 90-year-old man, and his wife was in there with him.
Drew's brow rises.
The two of them were getting it on like they were newlyweds. I have to say, it gives me hope for the future.
He was in his 90s? I ask. He nods.
And she was probably in her late 80s.
He gives a shudder, but laughs. We're both cracking up while enjoying an afternoon eaten outside at a bistro when I see Ben. Jenna's brother looks lost, and I know he's been having a rough time. My laugh quiets, and suddenly guilt consumes me like a ball of fire. How can I be laughing with another man? Drew's best friend is still bereft with grief. I'm Drew's wife. I should be worse off. I can't, I say, my mood changing lightning fast.
What?
My face feels flushed as I suddenly feel out of breath, and I know I appear like a crazed bipolar patient off their meds. I can't do this. I'm not ready. How can I possibly be happy when he's in the ground?
Kate, please.
He reaches for me. For the briefest second, I pause.
I think I've fallen in love with you.
His words only catapult me from my seat because I'm starting to fall myself. How can I possibly take that leap with someone else? I belong to Drew. I bolt from the restaurant and from his life. I ignore his calls. I refuse to see him. Weeks later, when my boss offers me the transfer of a lifetime, I know I have to take it. I can move to DC and start fresh in a new city where memories of my Drew won't haunt me.
You can't move without telling him.
Jenna berates me. She's right. Yet I can't talk to him either. He doesn't deserve what I did to him. He's been nothing but good to me. So I write him a letter explaining that I'm leaving town. I ask for his forgiveness and for his understanding. I leave with strict instructions to Jenna for her not to tell him where I've gone if he should ask. Only fate put us together again. Present. I take Andy's hand in mine. There are a few things I need to show you and do before I can answer you. When we get to my place, he sits on the couch when I go to my room to get something. I come back to the room and sit next to him before I hand him the letter. It's the letter Ben gave to me from Drew those many, many months ago. Chapter 32. Present. I walk up to Andy, or Drew, as I should now call him, and hand him the manila envelope I received last week. It was from Ben, which surprised me a little, but the mysterious contents intrigued me even more. Inside were two more envelopes, one addressed to me, and the other said, "The one. Kate, do not open." When I read the letter and the one addressed to me, my emotions were all over the place, as I was thrown by the handwriting. Of course, I should have known he would have thought of everything. And he did.
"Kate, if you're reading this, then Ben has deemed it was the appropriate time to pass this along, which means you have found the one. Ben's instructions were to send you this when he knew you had either fallen in love again or were getting married. I hope for your sake that you are the happiest woman in the world. It is my most fervent wish that you live life to its fullest with a man of your dreams. The other envelope is for him. Don't you dare open it. If he chooses to share it with you, that is his business. Be happy. You deserve nothing less than the best. Yours, Drew."
Tears clouded my vision when I read it. Now I stand before my other Drew, or Andy, and hand him his letter. His eyes ping back and forth between it and me.
"What is this?"
"It's from Drew. Ben sent it." A V forms between his brows, and he turns it over a few times in his hands as he stares at it. He sits on the couch, with his forearms resting on his thighs. I can't even imagine what he must be thinking as he holds a letter from his girlfriend's deceased husband.
"This is pretty weird, Kate."
"Yeah, I know. If you don't want to read it..."
"No, I do."
He fills his lungs with air and very gently opens the thick paper. Inside, I see the familiar handwriting, but I don't dare peek. I walk to the other side of the room as he reads. He stops for a moment, wipes his face, and continues. When he's finished, there isn't a dry part of his face. Tears freely run, and he does nothing to stop them. His arm extends out to me with a letter in his hand.
"You should read this."
I take it from him and exchange it for a handful of tissues. Then I begin.
"To the one. Since you're reading this, Kate has either consented to marry you or has told you she's fallen in love with you. If you haven't yet asked her to marry you, you better do so. Love. Those words don't come easy for her, nor does she say them frivolously to just anyone. So you are one lucky bastard, let me tell you. And with that being said, I would ask that you treat her like the most precious bird alive. Most people think their loved ones need to be treated like gems, but gems are hard and don't need special care. Kate does. Don't let her fly away. I'm sure she wanted to run from you. She probably felt guilty about loving you. Tell her I said to forget about that damn guilt. It's a useless emotion that will bring her nothing but more pain. If she's chosen you, you'd better do everything in your power to deserve her, because she's special. Kate changed my life. She has a way of putting her handprint on things, and when she does, they're never the same again. She did that to me. She put the extra beat in my heart, made the blood flow faster through my veins, made my soul burn brighter and my spirit grow deeper. Once she entered my life, I knew there was no going back. I hope she does that to you, too. I once said that getting cancer made me more empathetic. That wasn't true. It was Kate who did that to me. I wanted her to move on and to find someone else after me, and I'm glad she did. My friend Ben has my permission to kick your ass if you're not good to her, and he will. He's that kind of guy. But I'm hoping he doesn't have to, because I truly want you to make her the happiest woman on earth. For everything I put her through, she deserves it. Now go and do her right. Treat her well, and love her with everything you've got. You won't be disappointed. Drew McKnight.
The letter flutters out of my hand because I'm incapable of anything, standing, seeing, talking, or breathing. Andy's scent is all around me, so I know he's there as I break into all the pieces Drew loved.
Kate, baby, it's gonna be okay.
I'm not so sure. Drew has been gone now for almost 3 years, yet the pain still stabs me in the chest like it happened yesterday. I feel like one of the pieces of me left with all the pieces of him when they departed this world. I'm sorry, it just came back. He was always a good guy, and here he proves it in death. I sob. I'm sorry. I say again.
There's nothing to be sorry for. You wouldn't be the woman I fell in love with if that letter didn't affect you. He loved you, and I have big shoes to fill.
I let him hold me as I continue to cry. Somewhere, as Andy holds me with no judgment, no jealousy, no anything but all of his love, a piece inside that was missing fits into place. As the tears slow, I realize I'm blessed for having Drew for the time I did. He showed me what love is, what it was meant to be. He gave me the tools to know when love was right. He gave me all of him, as I had given all of myself in return. He wanted me to find love again, and I have. I hadn't been sure until this point that I had 100% to give back to someone else, but I was wrong. I think back to something Drew said long ago. He said he didn't believe in one soulmate for everyone. And I'm grateful he's right. Not that I wanted him to pass from this earth and from me, but I'm humbled to have found someone else I could love so completely who loves me the same way. Immeasurable eyes, the color of calm, clear seas, cornflowers blowing in the breeze, and the skies on the clearest days wait patiently as I break over another man. It's then I know for sure that I'm the luckiest woman in the world. Not many people are given a second chance at love. I won't waste mine. Yes, I say. He has no idea that while staring at him, I know I've built myself up again and I'm ready to take the plunge.
Yes?
Yes, I'll marry you if you'll have me.
Epilogue. Andrew, Drew, Mercer. The drive isn't long, and neither is the walk. Kate's hands are linked in mine, and she's not sure why I brought us here, because I haven't told her. There's no noise as we walk across the grass to a place of eternal rest, or so they say. The birds are even respectful as a peaceful calm greets us as we make our way to the stone. It isn't fancy, because according to all I've learned, it wasn't Drew's style to be. The marble headstone is simple and has just the right number of words. Andrew Stanford McKnight, cherished son and loving husband. I glance down at Kate. Nerves are starting to get the better of me. I squeeze her hand while I run the other over my hair. I try to smile to encourage her as I search for the words I haven't exactly practiced. I turn away from her to give my attention to the headstone. I'm not sure how to do this. I pause, still unsure of what I want to say. Diving in, I say what's in my heart. McKnight, I don't really expect that you are here, but I hope in some way you hear me. I would like to respond to the letter you wrote. Most importantly, I hope for your blessing of Kate's hand. Just so you know, I asked her father, and he approved. But I need your approval as well. I blow out a breath. The guy wrote a letter that could have moved a mountain. I can't reply to your letter with words on a page, so here I am. You're right that Kate is someone special. And I know that part of who she is today has been shaped by how you loved her. I'm grateful for that role you played in her life. I promise you, I will treat her like she is the last of her kind, because she is. I plan to only love one woman, and she's the one. She's my bird, and I promise to keep her heart safe and love her with all of me, the same way you did. She had no idea why we came, by the way. But it was important for me to tell you that she's in the right hands before she walks down the aisle. I don't ever expect her to stop loving you. I'm not that petty or jealous because I know she's capable of loving both of us. You mean the world to her, and I plan to do my best to make her as happy as you did. You are sorely missed, and this woman, our hospital, this world was a better place with you in it. And without you, there is a part missing. I expect you to watch over our girl when I can't. And maybe we meet again one day, sometime very far in the future. Still holding Kate's hand, I watch as she lays a bunch of flowers at the foot of the headstone. I didn't ask why she chose the flowers she did. I figured they meant something, and according to the web, they did. The white carnations represent remembrance. The purple lilacs mean first love, and the gladiolas represent strength of character. They are great choices for everything I know about the man. I hand Kate some tissues from my pocket. She gives me that shy smile she gave me the first day we met. Then I knew there was something special about her. But she'd been a colleague's wife. Today, she will become mine. We get to the church on time, but Kate's mother still hustles her way. Something about me not seeing the bride on her wedding day. I'm sent to the boys' room, where I find Mitch, Dave, and Ben sitting around, talking, looking hungover. Where have you been? Jenna's furious you both missed the brunch buffet. I had business to take care of, I say offhandedly. Ben was Drew's best friend, but what Kate and I did this morning is between us. If she chooses to share, she will. Mitch laughs. That's code word for banging his bride before the wedding. He's wrong about that. Jenna convinced Kate that us not having sex the month before the wedding would be good for the honeymoon. As much as I've tried to explain to Kate that my balls, in fact, do appear to be blue, she's been unwilling to give me a second opinion. She tells me she's just as needy as I am. No sex thanks to his sister. I point an accusatory finger at Ben. He shrugs. She has all kind of stats on that shit. Dave just looks amused and changes the direction of the conversation. Your sister is really hot. Is she still dating that guy? Ben's eyes grow horns and appear as though they are glowing red. I've heard enough about you two to know neither of you should ever think about my sister. Mitch laughs. All's fair in sex and booze at a wedding. Ben's about to say something, but Dad knocks on the door. Time. The guys eye me, but I'm not nervous. I want Kate with every fiber of my being. My only wildest fear is if she'll break her promise and run. And even that fear has diminished over the last several months. I trust her completely. At the altar, when they begin to play that familiar tune, I stand and stare at the door opening. I wait until Kate appears, and when she does, all the air is sucked out of my lungs. She is so fucking beautiful, I can only blink. Mitch taps my back, and I remember to breathe. Her hair is pulled back in some elaborate way I can't focus on, because her face is radiant, and I still can't quite believe she's mine. My gaze lowers to the dress I hadn't been allowed to see, let alone hear about. It isn't quite white and has fabric that hangs purposefully off her shoulders, leaving her collarbones exposed. That skin alone is enough to get my dick hard. Like the sex-deprived guy I am, I focus on the little amount of cleavage she has on display and lick my lips. I feel like an asshole as I try to hide my hard-on as my gorgeous bride walks toward me with tulips that look almost white in her hand. But from what I overheard, the bridesmaids say at the rehearsal dinner, they are actually a pale yellow. Knowing what I do about Kate, I'd searched for the meaning, and yellow tulips means hopelessly in love. She has no idea that she's talking about me because I'm just that far gone when it comes to her. When her father hands her off to me, I don't hear the minister. He spoke at the rehearsal, so I know what he plans to say. I stand in awe of my bride, feeling like the luckiest bastard on the planet. Then I have a moment to say a prayer for feeling guilty. If not for Drew McKnight passing from this world, I wouldn't have this opportunity. I know what I have to do. When it comes time, I am ready. I take her hands in mine and stare into the windows of her soul because she needs to know I've never felt this way about anyone else, and I never will. She is my first and my last, my only, and now is the time to not only tell her, but tell the world. Kate McKnight, I knew when I met you I wasn't your first love. That honor belonged to Drew McKnight, and his shoes won't be easy to fill. I'm thankful to him for encouraging you to love again, thus giving me the greatest opportunity of a lifetime to spend it with you. I want to glance at his parents who sit somewhere in the pews to the left of me, but I refuse to take my eyes off my girl. I knew this when I decided you were the one with whom I wanted to share my life. Your beauty, your heart, and your mind encourage me to be the best person I can be. And I vow that I will do whatever it takes to be, if not your first, your last love. I promise to love you without reservation, encourage you to achieve all of your goals, laugh with you, comfort you in times of distress, always be open and honest with you, cherish and be faithful to you for as long as we both shall live. For this is my promise and my solemn vow. I see Kate's tears, and reluctantly, I let her hand go to produce a tissue from my pocket. This is something I did the first day we met, and it seems as important. She smiles at me in a way that tells me she remembers as well, and dabs her eyes with it. Then she takes my hand again, and it's her turn. Drew Mercer, I didn't think I could love again or even want to. When you came in my life, you came with your patience and understanding. You offered friendship and encouragement in my time of need. Our love wasn't hurried. It came over time in a way that scared me at first, but made me feel secure in the end. Drew McKnight did leave big shoes to fill, and not because he wore a size 14. That gets a few laughs and even a chuckle from me. But I know Drew would approve of you, knowing you could handle the job. I promise from this day forward I will give you all my love and you will not walk alone. Your love is my anchor, your trust, my strength. I give you shelter for your heart and may my arms be your home. I willingly give you all that I am and all that I will become. My love for you has no beginning or no end. For this is my promise and my solemn vow. I want to kiss her now. I want to take her in my arms and tell her that her words are my own. But I wait as the minister has us say a few more things before he finally lets me kiss my bride. Her lips are my lifeline, and I have to break it off. Otherwise, I'll have a serious tent in my pants. When she pulls back, she leans up again. Her lips slide against my cheek and up to my ear. There is one more thing I need to tell you, husband. I wait as everyone gets on their feet, ready for us to walk down the aisle, joined hand in hand. We're having a baby. And I thought there was no greater joy in marrying the woman I love until I hear those words. After pictures and the cutting of the cake, I can't wait any longer. Where are we going? Kate asks as I take her hand in mine and drag her along with me. The limo. Her eyes grow in size and it only makes me harder. Fuck, Kate, you can't look at me like that. I won't last. The door is unlocked and the driver is nowhere in sight. I take her down NFL style, full-on tackle. My hands gather more and more of her dress, with no end in sight. How much fabric does this dress have? She's teasing me, and she doesn't know the state I'm in. Seeing her and not being able to touch her for the last month has made me lose all finesse. I kiss her hard, and her teasing dies away. She fists her hand in my hair, tugging me closer. And I know she's as desperate as I am for me to be buried balls deep inside her. There's no need for a condom, as if I'd worn any since that first time without one, which explains the baby thing. After I dip two fingers inside her and find her wet and ready, I dive in. I groan out my relief because she's heaven. I languish being inside her skin to skin. When her nails dig in my ass, that's her sign telling me to move. I oblige and rock myself forward hard and at a steady pace. Harder, she begs. I lift her ass off the seat and angle her differently. I know just how to set her off and give her her first orgasm in seconds. Her pussy milks my dick, almost setting me off. But I'm not ready yet. It feels so damn good to be inside her again. I want it to last. So, as a diversion, I think of work for a second, and that halts everything. Leaning down, I capture her lips in a searing kiss. She tastes like the sweetest cake, and I feel myself building again. It isn't long before I'm saying, "Fuck, Kate, I'm going to come." My words rocket her second orgasm. Her back arches off the seat and I ride her all the way back down. My climax jars me so hard I collapse on top of her when I'm done. I hope you believe me now that my balls really were a nice shade of blue. About 8 months later, I stare into the eyes of the woman I love so completely. I'm mesmerized every time I look at her. I try not to smile at the frantic look on her face. She's totally out of sorts as they wheel her into labor and delivery. Andy, don't let go of my hand. Her plea for my support does something to my chest and I feel almost like beating on it. Never, I say gently as she squeezes the ever-loving life out of it.
It's not fair. You're all calm. You don't have to push a turkey out of Louise. I mean, how do they know she's ready? She doesn't have a basting button on the side of her head.
We doctors don't know. We usually leave that up to the baby. That's why our daughter has made her opinion known on the subject. Kate glares.
You know it's a girl, don't you?
She whips out an accusatory finger pointed in my direction.
You said she. You promised it would be a surprise and you wouldn't sneak and find out.
They set the gurney in the room and prepare to shift her over to the specialized bed they use for the delivery. She doesn't let go of my hand. I have to stretch in order not to pull her off it as I make my way around and next to her. I didn't find out. You called her a her and I went with it. Her eyes narrow and I swear the chuckle I'm holding in will burst out of me. Before she can say anything else, her face gathers at the brow, pinching in pain.
Andy, I want pain medication.
It had been Kate's idea to go without meds. I'd supported her decision either way. Okay, let me see if Dr. Yancey is on the floor. I'm about to let her go when a man walks in as Kate continues to squeeze my hand like it's an orange and she's trying to make juice. The man holds a chart, but I don't recognize him. "Dr. Carter," Kate says in surprise. His face grows a smile at my wife in a way that says he's familiar with her. "Mrs. Mercer, it's good to see you again." I hold up a finger. "A moment." He glances up at me, and I'm sure he's dealt with plenty of fathers over the years. "Sure." When Kate's pain passes, I kiss her knuckles. "I'll be right back. I'm just going to step over here and talk to Dr. Carter." I nod at the nurse, and she steps over to reassure Kate while I confer with the good doctor. 3 steps, and I stand to one side of the room with the other man. He gets the jump on the conversation to come. "Dr. Mercer, your wife has nothing but great things to say about you. I'm sorry we haven't met. Apparently, the 2 times I had the pleasure of seeing your wife, you had emergencies that kept you away." I take his proffered hand and shake it. "Nice to meet you, Dr. Carter. My wife mentioned you." She had. She hadn't said he was a he. Not that it should matter. I get to the heart of the matter. Kate wanted to go without an epidural, however, she's changed her mind. "I'm sure you know it all depends on how far along she is. Can you tell me about her contractions?" I run down medically how labor began with her water breaking and what we did since that point. We'd opted to stay at home where I walked with her, rubbed her back, and generally got her through the pain until this point. Last checked, I clocked the contractions at about 5 minutes apart and told him so. Although things had progressed on the drive over, she'd been so worried, I found myself talking to her instead of timing the pauses between her pain. "As long as she's not crowning, I can send the order for an anesthesiologist to come down."
"Andy, I think I need to push."
Dr. Carter and I turn to see Kate. Her face is strained like she's physically holding herself back. Frozen, we both watch as the nurse checks her.
"Dr. Carter, I think it's time."
He glances at me, and I feel like an ass. He's a doctor, not a pervert. I nod, giving him permission to do his job, as I quickly make my way over to Kate.
"It's too late, isn't it?"
she asks. I give her my hand and push tendrils of hair off her forehead.
"Let's see what the doc says."
Dr. Carter gives us the news.
"Go ahead and push, Kate, the next time you feel it."
And just like that, my gorgeous wife pushes our son into the world. Over 5 years later, I steer my car through the streets of DC to get home. Traffic is ridiculous, despite it being before rush hour. I'd hoped to be home by now. I pull into our Great Falls neighborhood in Virginia, just outside of DC. Our home is lit up and a smile forms on my face. When we first bought the place, Kate had been reluctant. I sold her on the safety of the neighborhood and good schools. When I open the door, the real reasons for the large 5-bedroom house come running toward me.
"Daddy!"
shouts my 2.5-year-old daughter. Her blonde curls bounce as she wraps herself around my leg. I pry her off so I can toss her up and catch her, sending her into a fit of giggles. Her pink princess dress circles her before she lands in my arms.
"Daddy, Dew called me a baby and said I need a lobotomy. What's a lobotomy?"
I laugh for several reasons. One, because she hasn't yet mastered the word Drew, opting to call him Dew instead. Ethan had proved too much for her as well. 2, a lobotomy. I shake my head, wondering where he hears this stuff.
"Ethan," I call out.
I had intended to ask my 5-year-old about school. Instead, I will have to address his treatment of his sister. My son, with his dark hair so much like his mother's, is decked out in scrubs and carrying a doctor's bag. He strolls around the corner as if all's well in the world, wearing a plastic stethoscope around his neck. I bend down so we can talk man to man.
"Ethan, let's talk like men."
"Then call me Drew, Daddy, just like Grandma calls you. I want to be a man just like you, Daddy."
It's hard to maintain my parental look. Okay, Drew, did you call your sister a baby? His face changes to remorseful, as I'm sure he knows he's in trouble. Emma cries too much and babies cry, so she's a baby. I can't argue with that logic, and good thing my daughter who clings to my chest chimes in.
He says my castle is just a bed, not a princess castle.
I sigh. Drew, Dad, she needs a reality check. I chuckle, unable to stop it. Where did you hear that?
Mom said that to Aunt Shannon.
I shake my head, only imagining the conversation that had preceded that statement. You need to be nice to your sister and not tell her she needs a lobotomy.
But Aunt Shannon told Uncle Eric he's crazy and needs a lobotomy, and Emma's crazy.
Ethan Andrew Mercer. I glance up to see Kate with her mom face on. She does a better job at maintaining a stern face than I have in the past few minutes. Only to me, she looks sexy as hell doing it.
You won't go trick-or-treating if you're mean to your sister. Now apologize.
Drew's head bows and he manages to eke out a, Sorry, Emma.
Now, go eat your snacks on the table before it gets dark.
Food is more important than me as my kids rush off to the kitchen table. I stand so I can kiss my beautiful wife. It lingers and my hand catches the curve of her ass. She giggles, which turns me on because she doesn't laugh like that often. I have to shift because my scrubs won't hide the evidence of my arousal. And that's a conversation I'm not prepared to have with my kids.
What was that for?
Her smile is infectious and it spreads on my face. You're so damn beautiful, Kate. I swear you get prettier every day. Her eyes warm her face.
You are full of shit. I look and feel like a beached whale.
I rub her belly with my other hand. Any day now.
Any day? My due date was 2 days ago. And I really don't want to have a Halloween baby. Can you imagine throwing a party every year on Halloween?
I laugh because she's been talking about this since we first found out she could deliver near this day.
Then you should get off your feet.
I bend and catch her off guard. I lift her in my arms.
You're crazy. I weigh a ton.
She heartily laughs.
You two should get a room.
I glance up to see my sister-in-law.
Shannon, can you watch the kids for a few minutes?
Sure.
She winks at us.
Just as long as you take that somewhere else.
I don't ask twice. I carry my wife up to our bedroom and close the door behind us. I set her down in her favorite chair in front of the fireplace, where I remove her shoes and massage the bottom of her feet.
Really, you brought me up here for that?
She may be joking, but there's heat in her eyes. Believe me, I want you. Sex, however, can bring on contractions, and you said you wanted to wait another day. She shrugs.
It's up to you, but you'll be sorry. 6 weeks will be a long time to wait.
It isn't like Kate and I have been abstaining. We've had sex every night this week because she was ready to give birth, hoping to avoid this day. I'll do whatever you want.
Or maybe I'll do you.
She urges me to stand and come around to the side of the chair. I follow her instructions because I know what she's about to do. And I'm right. She gives me the best damn blowjob of my life. Practice can certainly improve on perfection. I didn't think it possible, but it is. Later, after I take the kids trick-or-treating, we sit on the back deck on a porch swing. Ethan finds a place in his mother's lap as Emma curls herself in mine. Our two kids sleep as my fingers twine with Kate's. The swing rocks back and forth in a calming rhythm. Kate's eyes are closed and her features smooth out. Her lips are curved as if she's having a pleasant dream. And I think about how lucky I am. Kate decided not to work after our son was born, which was her decision. Still, my wife can't be idle. She started the Drew McKnight Foundation, which serves people with Ewing sarcoma, both young and old. She's hired full-time people now, but she still oversees it and watches the financial end of it like a hawk. She used some of the money Drew left her to start the non-profit, and she involved Drew's parents, who have become true activists on the subject. We named them honorary grandparents to our kids. It was something I wanted to do, and Kate too, so she readily accepted. Their faces light up every time we bring the kids around to visit when we're in Charleston. And they come up to spend time here as well, because we have plenty of room. In fact, after the baby is born, we will have rotating grandparents visiting 2 weeks at a time to help Kate as she nurtures our latest gift to the family. I don't know how Kate does it all, but she doesn't want to hire a nanny either. She's a superhero to the kids and the best wife ever to me. Kate, I call out. I can't help myself.
Hmm?
Her eyes flutter open, clear, and focus on me. I love you and our life. I tell her I love her every day, yet I feel the need to confess that to her.
I love you too, and our life.
I lean over and kiss her, careful not to wake our children. Then I see it. Her face forms a frown.
It's time.
I nod, grateful Shannon has been staying with us. She wanted to be here to help. She doesn't have classes the next few days and offered to come and stay for this very reason. I pick up the kids and carry them to bed. I tuck them in and kiss their foreheads. On the way, I knock on Shannon's door and tell her what's going on. Then I walk back down and gather my formidable wife in my arms, remembering how messed up I'd been when she left me the first time. I'd assumed after that I'd never find love. But fate brought us back together, and I knew I had to win her over. Even if we had to fight to overcome the cruel, we hung on to the beautiful. And it was damn worth it.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Cruel and Beautiful, written by A.M. Hargrove and Terry E. Lane, performed by Erin Mallon and Jason Clark. Executive producer Susie Bright, producer Mike Charzik. Copyright 2015 by A.M. Hargrove and Terry E. Lane. Production copyright 2016 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.